podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I did say, you was only on for 5 minutes. We conceded while you were on.
Yeah, that's true.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Planet FPL, the world where everything revolves around Fantasy Premier League. My name is Serge.
And my name is James.
Today feels much more like, well, to be honest, last week felt like season's over. But then we've still had a week of like football.
Whoa. This time last week, I was drunk.
Yeah, you were. But it was season's over, but actually there was still that whole straggle of, there was still a lot of football, and a lot of football has been played between last week and now. But now we can say football is over until, of course,
Scotland play Ukraine on Wednesday night. Yeah, so exactly.
Never stops, does it? But yeah, it feels like it's actually ended up being a pretty busy weekend of football, and there's no fantasy to talk about from that kind of point of view.
Isn't there?
Oh,
I'd like to take issue with the one pointer I got.
Did you only get one point?
Yeah. I mean, I think I should have had three there personally, but
so we got the same number of points in a gaffer. I think James is, there's going to be a lot of listeners that don't even know what you're talking about. And so where have you been hiding? But obviously you're talking about gaffer.io for the game week 39 match that was played on Saturday. And we'll talk about that in a second. Not only that, in this episode today, we want to cover off Champions League final was played. Eventually.
Championship final.
Championship playoff final was played yesterday. We have a new team joining us in the Premier League that haven't been there for 23 odd years. There was a relegation playoff in France that kicked off a little bit yesterday.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that a bit.
So we've got a bit of that, and we're going to cover
some FPL stuff
at the end as well. Yeah, that we could talk about. So it's not been uneventful. It's not like where you're thinking last couple of days of our content before we go away, what are we going to talk about? There is enough.
We got to start with Saturday.
Saturday.
The big game on Saturday.
I don't mean
the Champions League final.
No, not at all. And for those who didn't know, obviously game week 39, we talk about fantasy and the whole point of the fantasy football world being a virtual space where it's all a game for geeks and what have you. I think the last two or three years have really shown that the power of the community is actually in real life interaction, not in virtual interaction on Twitter and stuff like that. We've had our lives and meetups as of the guys who got the assist and what have you. The guys at Fest who are both playing on Saturday, Ed and Gianni. I'm going to mix them two together. What do you get if you cross Ed and Gianni? Eddie.
Or Jean Baptiste, as I heard on Teach Mode Space.
Obviously, Fest, Nima, shout out to Nima, who was at the game as well, who's been doing the FPL meets and what have you, which has grown globally. He's got events, he's not pushing them, but people getting together all around the world. And the whole point of all of these events every single time is that actually real life interaction is when the community is at its best, not in a virtual space. And Game Week 39 for Ash and Benny, when they were putting together, I'm not sure, it's one of those things that you start and you don't know maybe how it's going to turn out or where it's going to go, was on Saturday, 2 p.m. kickoff, the North versus the South. Everybody managed to get there on time. We had a decent crowd in.
Yeah, that's a surprise in itself, isn't it, that no one was late?
Nah. An actual real 11-a-side, 45 minutes each way, game of football was played, and that's by a bunch of FPL geeks.
What a brilliant day. And obviously, Sidra's already alluded to it, but massive shout out especially to Benny Blanco, who obviously came on our pod and did a pod with me last Tuesday, and Ash FPL Hints for the amount of work and thought process that went into the whole day of the event. Absolutely incredible, from, you know, little subtle things like Harrison Eno being mascot for the North.
Yep.
I know, as Benny said on the pod last week, the whole idea was to have the whole gig organised and participated in by people from within the FPL community, which I think it basically got done all the way through bar referees.
Yeah.
We're basically the only thing. We had proper refs and stuff. He was funny. He laughed.
Oh, I don't know about that. He's a bit of an imposter, mate.
What, the ref?
Yeah, man. A number of times he was calling fouls against us.
I had him laughing. I think I had the ref in my pocket. When Gianni was injured towards the end, I was he had cramp, poor fella.
Yeah, but his shin was pretty fucked as well, I saw.
It was. But the ref was, he was looking well unhappy. He was like, God, it's a lot of time wasting going. Obviously, they were losing, so he wasn't time wasting. Come on, ref's got a date at 5 o'clock. And he looked at me and he went, I think I'm a bit past that, mate.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, the game's obviously North v South. If you're following on Twitter, then obviously you'll know that the South won. 2-0 victory.
Get in there.
Big shout out to Nacho, scored two goals on
the
day.
Did you say 2-0?
2-1.
Yeah, 2-1.
2-1. I did say 2-1.
He was only on for 5 minutes. We conceded while you were on.
Yeah, that's true. Sham in goal, all 5'6".
Heroic.
5'6" between the sticks. I'm sure there's a chance to shout about. But also the guys from the North played well as well. I thought Benny was decent and everybody put in a shift. The game is going to be live on our YouTube channel
to watch.
Well, it's going to be premiered on our YouTube channel. I'm going to say Tuesday, which is the 31st at 8 p.m.
That's what we're planning.
Any
towards.
Changes, like obviously keep an eye and follow James on Twitter at Plenty FPL Pod. If for technical reasons we cannot do it. I definitely think it's worth a watch. It was a good game, right? It wasn't like one of the fears where you've got a group of players on both sides who don't play regularly with each other and you don't know the ability levels and what have you. Is the last thing you want is it to be like 6-0 one way in a complete...
I know, I think there were fears
uncompetitive game. But it was a really evenly matched, good competitive game. I think in the early stages, we managed to get in behind and scare them. They controlled the ball well, had a few good chances as well. Benny hit a decent free kick. They had a lot of corners.
And somehow we escaped the majority of them until right at the end.
Second half, obviously, they started, came out, well, then Nacho comes back on the pitch, does what he does, put the ball in the back of the net again.
He did miss
a few chances, and we could have been 3 or 4 up by then, and it would have been a different game. But definitely worth a watch. A really good game.
Yeah,
of football.
I think. Do you know what? Quality level was way better than I think any of us had really anticipated, because you just didn't know really, right? Mm. We knew the capabilities of our team. We didn't have any idea of the North, and I think it had been kind of hyped up that they were favourites and stuff. And actually, the way the game panned out, I don't think that's actually incorrect that they were hyped up as favourites. They had more of the ball, more of the territory, corners, you said, so many and stuff. Yet, Sham made a lot of saves in the game, but there weren't many weldies and stuff. I think even Sham would admit that. Really good one that he tipped over from a free kick in the first half. Other than that, he wasn't overly worked, and we defended really well and countered, and I think probably we had the better chances all over throughout the game. So I think it's one of them where they probably dominated a lot of the stats bar the final score, and I think we probably would have had the XG if there was such a thing going on at the weekend well.
I think, obviously Raptor came on with an injury, but he was a terror on the left. Like, that guy has got some pace and skill. Pete was good, Nacho on finishing. You held the midfield together. James Drury, people bouncing off him for fun. If you want to watch the game, just to watch people bounce off James Drury is worth it just for that. I'm sure there's some comedy memes that can come out from that for sure, because that guy is too human.
Do you know what? I'd like to go through and just name everybody. But I think like the defensive guys, particularly for me.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, as at right back, can't take a fucking throw in, but class. The two centre-backs, Plonker and H, absolutely brilliant. You seen that Harry sent a tweet out like naming everyone who like helped support him on the day, and I don't know why he didn't mention me protecting his arsehole fucking. And he even did it. He tweeted a picture of me of him with a trophy, and I'm photobombing it. So I was even in that, and he's not mentioned me. And big shout out to Ross FPL merch at left back. Honestly, so underrated on the day. He did an absolutely terrific job. I know a few people have said nice things about the way I played. But yeah, Iceman and Peter did all my fucking running. Absolutely brilliant. And I suppose the difference we had at the top end, our boys had chances. I mean, Nacho could have got 5 or 6, really, couldn't he?
Definitely.
He was great. And wait till you see the finish for the second goal.
That was cheeky. Cheeky is the way I describe it.
What a liberty. Brilliant.
I don't want to like overdescribed. I want people to come and watch it tomorrow night. Come and 8 p.m. whack on YouTube, and it's a decent game to watch. There's no other football going on, so make sure you get yourselves there. While you're there, you know what? They may as well hit subscribe to the YouTube channel. Do you know what I mean?
I'd say so. I think that's why we've got it, isn't it?
Yeah, and not only that. So when I spoke to Benny in the evening.
We should shout out Manchild and Nico as well, shouldn't we, to be honest.
Did the photography, videography, and what have you. I think we'll give them a shout out after we've seen the video.
All right, fair enough.
When I spoke to Benny in the evening, I don't know if there's a final total yet, but all in all, it was over $5,000 so far is what they've got.
It's top five now.
It's top five.
It's phenomenal.
For Street Child United, and there were a couple of reps there from the charity on the day, Jasmine and Anya, and there's a couple of interviews and bits and pieces that we'll show with them at half time tomorrow in the game as well. But yeah, I mean, you'll remember when we did the live stream and we topped a similar, it was like $6,000, but it's hard work to get that much money out of people and to contribute, and it's incredible to get that much money. I think is really impressive for something that was a dry run. I think the greatest takeaway you can have from something like that is that everybody's like buzzing for next year. Do you know what I mean? Everyone feels like, right.
Oh, the rematch is happening.
Everyone's buzzing for next year.
I'm not going. I'm leaving with my 100% record. We're out of here.
That's a sign of a good event, right? When people are like, right, when we're doing it again, and they got to take credit from that. So looking forward to it. Yeah,
I know the South guys are already talking about trying to arrange a game with Nima's
lot again. FPL this is it, right? This is where FPL, when you can bring the virtual to real life, and then friendships and relationships are put together. Money's raised for charity on top of that. You know,
people came from so far as well. Paddy flew in.
I was chatting to Merch after 8 p.m. Like, yeah, he had a major drive home. What an effort! Paddy obviously flew in from Ireland.
Met the two legend Bens from the community.
Yes,
Ben Dinnery, the injury expert who
injured himself.
Hopped off injured after 5 minutes. Ben was staying in the same hotel as us. Lovely bloke.
What a guy!
As well.
What a guy!
Met Ben Krellin as well. We didn't talk much about strategy and planning, but I'm sure we will in the months to come and stuff. That was great. Meet Paddy. It's always such a joy to flew over, meeting people we hadn't met before and stuff. The North were class, and they dealt with the defeat really well. We all went out and watched the Champions League final together afterwards and stuff. I think a few people got a bit more drunk than we did.
I was pretty sober, mate.
There was one sensible decision which I must thank Nico for, which was, let's get fucking out of here. It's about to go sideways, basically about midnight or something.
I was busy celebrating my birthday, mate. You know.
Oh, mate, what a mention. Why did you not tell anyone it was your birthday on Saturday?
Oh, mate, because it wasn't my birthday on Saturday. But when we were eating in a restaurant, do you want to elaborate
on this?
Oh, this is like Manchild's got this thing now where when we go to restaurants, and it's the type of restaurant that will give you something if it's your birthday, like a cake. He tells him it's my birthday for no reason. So we're sitting having dinner, finished our meal, and suddenly Manchild looks at me, looks at Nemo who's sitting next to me, and says, "Nemo, you good to just roll with it?" And Nemo's like, "Sure." Manchild just starts singing "Happy Birthday" out of nowhere, and there's like 3 or 4 seconds of me like, "What's he doing?" And I'm like, "Oh, here we go. He's singing it for me." And then people behind me on another table start joining in. And I'm like, all right, I've got to just roll with it. So then they bring out cake with a candle.
You nearly put your hand in.
I didn't expect it to turn up from over my shoulder. And you can't imagine like them turning around to the restaurant and saying, "It's not my birthday." And they're like, "You bastards, you've like, Manchild's photo go be it. On the wall. Like, do not let this person enter our restaurant again." So I just rolled with it. But yeah. So I also had a second birthday on Saturday as well. So good day out. I think everybody, all I could say is obviously watch the game if you can. If you ever get the opportunity to come out and meet some members of the community, it's always, always a good event. And if you want to donate, then head over to Game Week 39 North v South and follow it on Twitter as well, because they'll accept and would welcome any more donations on the Just Giving page as well. Followed by another game that was not probably played. Played in the same spirit, but not supported in the same spirit.
I guess also didn't go to script. But no, yeah, unfortunately, it's probably more a discussion about off the pitch rather than on the pitch. Some horrendous scenes, both before particularly and also obviously after the game as well. Liverpool fans have been caught up in something extremely disturbing, and this is a story that's going to rumble on and on in terms of the way the French police acted and then also the responses of UEFA. Their original statement blaming fans for arriving late, when we know that there were fans that were arrived at the ground 2.5 to 3 hours before kickoff and still didn't get in. Like, it's disgraceful stuff. And there's people who would have paid thousands of pounds for that experience, and we know there were families caught up in this stuff. It's never acceptable that football fans can go to a game of football and actually have to be there in fear for their own safety and stuff. That can never, ever be an acceptable thing that can happen. And unfortunately, when I reflected on it, my experience of going to games in Europe has not been good when I think about police operations abroad. So I'll just give you a few. I mentioned Barcelona a few times. Went to Barcelona, massive stadium, cathedral of football. Nah, bollocks, it's a fucking shithole. And what the police did with us, and bearing in mind we hadn't played there for 35 years, was march us down a tight alleyway where it was inevitable there was going to be a bit of a crush, and you're met by police at the end of this crush with arms. Police officers are like going to war rather than doing a football operation and stuff. Also, Germany's been fantastic. I was very lucky there was a crush when Tottenham fans tried to get in Dortmund, and me and Dad managed to weave our way through it and get through that. In Milan, in 2010, the police presence was very heavy. Where we've been lucky and probably a bit smart is we have generally gone in grounds early and avoided that. It's not to excuse what happened, because we know there are people that have turned up early. But I've heard that at Dortmund, anybody was caught up in that for Tottenham fans say, like, it was horrendous the way that police operation was. Was that
the police causing that problem?
In my opinion, not necessarily police. In that case at Dortmund, like stewarding and whatever, just for whatever reason, couldn't seem to cope with. I think that there wasn't enough gates for the area in the stadium they gave us. And they've actually moved away fans onto the corner a little bit more at Dortmund now, which might have been off the back of that when we went there. There was no trouble between Dortmund and Tottenham fans, it's worth saying.
Yeah.
And actually, the majority of places like Germany, I found so welcoming and stuff. I haven't watched Tottenham in France, but most of the places I've gone, like in Spain, I found it a bit naughty. The Champions League final, when Tottenham and Liverpool played each other, is probably one of the best run ones I've heard of over the last few years.
Bust out. That's the thing.
Well, the thing was, we got dropped off at the stadium 5 hours before kickoff, and there wasn't enough time to go anywhere and do anything. So we went into the grounds of the stadium like 5 hours before kickoff. So if there were any problems like that, I was nowhere near it. But it seemed on that occasion it was quite well dealt with. There might also be the impact from that in terms of it feels like probably Paris were completely unaware of just how many Liverpool fans were obviously going to be in the city anyway. I mean, in Madrid, it was estimated like 100,000 Liverpool fans and 50,000 Tottenham fans. Like, you're never going to have a stadium big enough for a Champions League final. No. Never.
No, agreed.
Never.
This is a combination of various things all coming together and being wrong at the same time. It's frustrating that the approach is always expect the worst and plan for the worst. And,
I genuinely think English drive fans everything down to the lowest so
common denominator. I watch some of the scenes and stuff on social media and on the BBC website and whatever else, and I don't have any experience of going to games where the police presence is that heavy. It might have been even in England. I don't think it's ever that happened. And for me, I look at it and I'm like, there's 50 or 60 cops there with batons and shields, charging, running like as a group. Like, I've never seen anything like that at a football game ever. And I can't understand the scenario where you need that heavy a police presence charging around at fans with shields and stuff. It just seems mental. So that's problem number one you've got there, right? It's cool if you even go back a couple of steps. The allocation of tickets is a piss take from UEFA. And so there's always going to be an issue of not enough fans getting tickets, and there's going to be plenty that want tickets that will pay black market prices. And
well, there can be no sense in the fact that for a Champions League final, over half the tickets go to non-football supporters.
That's bullshit.
And we know that probably, I'd say probably on top of another 50% of that will end up in football fans' hands, because they'll have to pay the extra, and these sponsors will sell them on and make the quick buck. Let's not pretend that doesn't happen. No. It obviously does happen.
And then the third element is the non-football fans and locals who are looking for trouble. And it happens in every city. And it happens here, I'm going to say, as well, probably. But when you've got an element that, all right, this is happening, we're going to go and target them, whether it's for violence or muggings or trying to nick tickets or whatever else, that adds another element to it where you're like, these are not football fans and these are not Liverpool fans. I wouldn't say laughing and joking, but thinking how ridiculous that they'd introduce this whole, if you're on the Champs-Élysées with a football shirt, you're going to get fined. That's basically...
What is that?
That's basically
saying, so bizarre.
We don't want you here.
We don't want you here, yeah.
We don't want you here. And then that's setting the tone from day one, right? Yeah. Of, we don't want the football fans here. That's that. But then, I mean, if you embrace them, the majority won't cause trouble. They'll be rowdy and they'll drink and what have you.
Listen, we're not saying that there weren't idiots out there. Well, I've seen Liverpool fans and a handful climbing fences. I've seen Madrid fans climbing fences.
Yeah.
I've seen what we assume are local people from Paris climbing fences and being chancers. So we're not saying Liverpool fans were 100% angels, but clearly 99% of them were there, and the Madrid fans were there to support their football team. That's the point. Listen, I'm not sitting here and saying English fans are angels. Look at fucking Wembley last summer, right?
Yeah,
the Euro
final.
We've got idiots, and it's these idiots that ruin it for everybody else in terms of, I think, absolutely, we get discriminated against when we go abroad. Mm. It's not Liverpool fans or Tottenham fans or Arsenal fans or whomever. Just English fans get treated like shit everywhere around Europe because we've got this reputation that's lived with us. And you know what? Perhaps in some ways, we're deserving of a little bit of that reputation. But I feel like, come on, man.
There's ways.
It's 2022, after COVID, we sat in, we did a podcast last week on pitch invasions and stuff. And one of the things we spoke about massively was security.
Lack of,
we've certainly learned over this weekend, it's not just an English problem.
No, exactly that. I mean, you wouldn't get any pitch invasions if you had that level of police. You wouldn't get that level of pitch invasion if you had that level of policing, but... Same country, France, yesterday.
Saying that, yeah.
And it kicks off like nobody's business.
Wow.
Just think about Wembley earlier in the day, and if Huddersfield didn't get promoted to the Premier League and their fans kicked off like that at the players and the dugout and stuff, it just went mental. We're going to throw flares at them and lob stuff and try and...
I don't think I've ever seen anything like that with St. Etienne. It's like a firework display on a football pitch getting aimed at like the tunnel.
That's
like non-stop
mad.
For minutes on end.
It's just the fickle nature of football fans.
There was also one in Holland as well where home fans, I think it was at Den Haag maybe, apologies, I might have that wrong, where home fans had gone on a pitch and the away fans are in a corner and they're just throwing flares at the away fans in from the pitch into the stands and stuff. So... Yeah, there's a problem in football that perhaps is going wider than what we've suggested in terms of just pitch invasions recently. I think one thing here to add on to the pod that we did last week on it is probably in terms of security of football stadiums, like we need to go back to probably pre-COVID levels of security in terms of people got to get searched and stuff.
Yeah,
because
properly. None of this stuff that happens at West Ham, wave the magic wand, beep, beep, and nothing else. Properly, like,
because
search.
I just think it's adding on to this
search
as well.
My kid's bag, for fuck's sake,
it's adding on to, clearly people have got in the Stade de France on Saturday with fake tickets or not, they've got over fencing because it looks like there's a fence perimeter before you go to the stadium, which isn't that uncommon in a lot of these European stadiums. It's the police created basically one of them at Atletico Stadium. Once you got beyond it, you was on the stadium grounds, if you will, and it is a bit like that at the home end at Tottenham, for example, as well. But we've heard stories like Andy Robertson. We heard talking after the game, wasn't it? Like he's one of his family members or a mate who had got him a ticket.
So they said it's fake ticket.
It's obviously not fake. Andy Robertson says he's saying the ticket I got's fake. Like,
people asking for extra money, stewards asking for cash,
and you've got serious journalists who were out there on the ground who can definitely corroborate like the fans of Liverpool fans' stories on, particularly on Gate Z. It sounds like where.
Why is the one? I think they closed
for no
and
reason.
Stuff.
They closed the gate by the sounds of it, for no reason other than I think they clocked that people were getting onto the grounds without tickets, panicked, locked the gates, and kind of down tools in terms of their station. There's rumours that some stewards were saying, "We'll let certain people in if you pay us." Like the stewards were looking for bribes and stuff. Obviously, young people out there. Again, we spoke last week about stewards not getting high wages, looking to take bribes from football fans to get allowed in. What's the problem as well in terms of locking gates when you've got several thousand people outside?
Can I charge them?
You've got a crush problem again. And like the Liverpool fans need to be thinking about that after Hillsborough. The shit's mental. Frightening, mate. Yeah. It's actually lucky that we've not had a catastrophe on Saturday. Nothing will happen, I'm afraid to say.
That's how I was going to wrap this
conversation. Fuck all will happen.
Yeah, UEFA are going to care, France are going to care, and that's it. Deal with it and move on with your lives. And it's not good enough. Let's hope that that we can put enough pressure and keep asking for answers to the extent that something does get done. But I'm with you. I don't think anything's going to happen.
No, sorry.
The game itself.
Which Real Madrid obviously won. I spoke on Friday about Vinicius Junior and Trent probably being the key battle. I mean, it didn't happen too much throughout the game. But I guess that key moment where Vinicius obviously scored in the back post. Courtois was the hero and made any number of saves. I think Liverpool can feel aggrieved that they lost, but Madrid had, particularly the longer the game went on, bar the one save he made from Salah, kind of with his arm, Courtois, it didn't really feel like Liverpool were going to score after Madrid scored. Good game management. I mean, fair games for Madrid. I don't think most of us like them because of the whole Super League fiasco and whatnots, but they beat the four best other teams in Europe, basically, to win the competition.
Might want to put Munich into the equation, maybe, but other than that, they beat the champions of England. They beat
and
the champions
three best teams in our country.
Yeah, and you could argue Liverpool well up there. So, yeah, I mean, they deserve it. 14 Champions Leagues or European Cups now. It's impressive
insane.
Haul. Benzema's got 5 himself now.
They won 5 in 8 or something.
Yeah.
You consider the top level opponents like Liverpool, City, Bayern, PSG, Barcelona. It's incredible to that. Win it 5 years in 8 years.
Yeah.
Mad stat going around. I think like a Croatian's won the Champions League every year since 2010 or something.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So shout out to Croatia, which I obviously mentioned. Good morning, Ivan Perisic.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that where we're going?
Well, maybe a Croatian win it next year. Jokes.
Well, you wait and see what I might predict for next season's bonkers predictions. But that's tomorrow's Patreon pod. I think one or two more signings is going to be interesting. What happens at your place, to be honest with you?
You think Tottenham are going to win the league, don't you?
Nah, not that good.
Because that would be a bonkers prediction.
No. I'm going to sneeze.
Say go on then. Bless you, mate. Wow, right. That's not a sneeze.
Championship playoff final was on Sunday.
Yeah, it wasn't a great game. Very evenly matched. I think Forest had a little bit better quality, and I think Huddersfield had moments nearer the end because Forest allowed them to come on to them. The main talking point from the game is they should have had 2 penalties, Huddersfield, at the end. And Paul Tierney, the VAR official, sputtered it. At least the first one where Toffolo got booked. It's a penalty all day long. It's such a slight contact that it means that Toffolo's right foot then collides into his left foot. How you read that as a dive, I don't know. Honestly, it's a penalty. And how you don't overturn it, I don't know. But Huddersfield didn't play well on the day. I don't think Forest played particularly well either. But welcome back to Forest. I feel like having Nottingham Forest back in the league gives a kind of vibe back to our earliest memories of the Premier League in the 90s and stuff. This is a very historical football club. Not a massive football club.
I don't really, you know, but my historical memory's not great, football but club. I don't have much memory of Forest in the Premier League. So,
well, I mean, for me personally, like we played Forest in the FA Cup final in 91. We played them in the League Cup semi-final in 1992. So Tottenham and Forest games in the early 90s was one of the games I looked forward to most. It was always traditionally a good football team as well. And the job that Cooper's done at Forest is absolutely incredible. I think that he's a great manager. Really knows what he's doing. You could tell after the game there's a real relationship between the players and the manager. I think they've got a lot of work to do. A lot. It'll be interesting to see. Obviously, Jed Spence is Middlesbrough's player. Do other Premier League clubs want to get him? Or do Forest have an agreement to sign him permanently, if, i.e. if promotion was achieved, maybe? We don't know. If they would lose him, you'd look at that squad and think it will need major surgery. Major surgery to be properly competitive in the Premier League. As it stands, probably the weakest of the three teams has come up in terms of squad depth and stuff. They've got an owner who's quite controversial, and we have spoken about him on a podcast we did a couple of years ago about match fixing in Greece. I'm sure we'll come back onto him because he certainly is a character. But I think he wants to invest in the football team as well. So they're a welcome addition back to the league. I know we've got Huddersfield followers as well. Commiserations to yourselves. I think shout out particularly to Luton, had an incredible season in the Championship. I personally, I'm pleased Forest to come back.
Yeah,
up.
And I think if you are a Huddersfield fan, I mean that second half of the season, or the run and
both
the form
clubs
of the
had
team,
an incredible run.
I think you've got to go into next season thinking that promotion is a real possibility for Huddersfield next season.
There'd have been no expectation on Huddersfield to have the season that they've had. Nah. And Cochrane's a very good manager as well. Just feel like they should have adapted in game yesterday. It was there to change system and go for it a little bit, and they didn't.
No. But yeah, looking forward to having Forest in the Premier League and picking an FPL asset or two, maybe there. We'll see. But we'll get some advice.
If only we had a correspondent who could give us some information on Nottingham Forest.
Well, we'll talk about him.
Any ideas?
We'll talk about him in a second. While we're introducing new correspondents for 2022-2023. The Chelsea takeover, Todd Bowley and co.
It's done. It's got, I think,
4 point
properly
signed.
Not
going to
get
tomorrow,
properly
maybe
ratified, I think, until Wednesday officially, right, which obviously shouldn't concern Chelsea fans. It was this hard kind of May the 31st deadline. You might find that the official paperwork's not done till Wednesday. It's not going to be a concern. Yes, this Todd Bowley deal is absolutely done. I feel like it could go either way for Chelsea. In terms of the investment, the investment's still going to be there, but I think your concern, you've said a little bit, is, you know, that
it is that, isn't it?
And so are they going to look at it a little bit like the Glazers have with United and stuff and want to return?
I think almost more.
The outlay is huge, isn't
it? It's been a big investment, and then to plow in another 300-500 million, they've clearly got the money. I don't know if the Glazers is necessarily a fair comparison. I almost look at Liverpool, to be honest with you, with their owners more than I look at the Fenway Group, but more than I look at the Glazers, because the Liverpool owners don't spend a lot. If I'm honest with you, they haven't invested massively.
No, but when there's been a big signing to make, like Alisson, Van Dijk, Diaz in January,
yeah, perhaps Liverpool have been particularly successful in the last 4 or 5 years because of Klopp and what he's built,
rather than going and spending the money.
And I think they're going to be similar. Whereas United, just they'll throw money at the problem, kind of thing. I don't think these guys will throw money at the problem to fix anything and just win it. But Chelsea have got a very good academy. They've got a lot of good youth coming through. It's clearly going to be interesting to see how it turns out. I think it could go either way. I just don't think that they're going to throw money at it. I just don't think they're going
to... The squad certainly needs investment because players come to a certain age or are leaving, where particularly in the defensive areas, clearly they need some sort of strength. And I think if they want to compete with City and Liverpool again next year... I would say they're potentially vulnerable for top four next year, depending on what they do in the market. We'll find out in the next couple of months.
Yeah, and I think it's actually the players that are going there out of contract we know about. If they can't lose many others, otherwise they're going to have a depth problem for sure. But we'll talk to a certain Gary Mantle.
Yes, I'd love to give a shout out to Ted Moore, Rotation FPL, our Chelsea correspondent, who I've known for months. He's stepping down. You may have heard his last COTC he did with us last, I think it was last month, before their double with West Ham and Manchester United. Ted's just stepping away because he just wants to concentrate on other things in his life, get out in the non-fantasy football world, so it'll be he's cutting off all his FPL commitments because he's been a moderator for Fantasy Football Scout as well. Ted has been an absolute gem to get to know. We did, like, one of our patrons is going to be stepping into Ted's shoes next year. Gary Mantle at Phantom Mantle on Twitter. I will give him a proper tweet out later today as well. It was Ted's choice. It was my choice. It goes regularly to Chelsea. Fairly unanimous decision to give him an opportunity to get on board. He's very astute tactically, by the way. Very astute. Really looking forward to working with him next season.
Lovely jubbly. One of the things when we started the whole correspondence gig is to give us an insight into teams that we don't watch regularly and try and get people that watch their teams regularly and understand their teams a little bit more. And some of the, I won't call them smaller accounts, but people in the community that are really active but that follow their local teams.
It has been always our goal to give smaller accounts with respect the opportunity to take up the correspondence gigs, to help them grow, give them an opportunity to have their voice and stuff, which we're now about to completely contradict.
Oh, are we? I thought, obviously, with Forest, I mean, with Fulham and Bournemouth, it was quite straightforward. Dara and Neil had been with us before and top guys.
Never left.
Welcome back. Forest, we'd never had anybody. And so in the vein of these small accounts...
Well, once Mark had Mark Southerns, FF Scout Mark, had tweeted after Forest beat... someone had tweeted him after Forest beat Sheffield United in the playoff semi-final.
Yeah.
Do you want it? And he was like, yeah, oh, if they'll have me, at which point there was nothing else to really speak about, was there? Because I think the community would have absolutely lynched us if we didn't take the opportunity to have Mark on. It's very humbling to have someone like Mark, who's obviously the OG, basically, of fantasy football in many people's eyes. The fact that he wanted to work with us on this next season. And I think it speaks volumes for the work that the other correspondents have done. And it's a brilliant opportunity for some of them will get the opportunity to obviously work with Mark on podcast next year for Clash of the Correspondents. So yes, Mark Southerns is our Nottingham Forest correspondent. And we're really looking forward to having him with us.
Is there any point in running the Correspondents Mini League anymore?
Yeah. Johnny Pringle will want his title back. No doubt about it.
I don't know where Mark finished this year. I mean, he's going to have had a good finish, I'm sure.
But below
I'm
you. Not sure.
Who?
You finished above Mark Southerns this year.
Did I?
Yes, mate.
Clip that for me, please. The shot.
Oh, Mark will be back strong. Listen, the only reason you finished above Mark took some gambles towards the end.
You've got to enjoy it. But yeah, really looking forward to having him. So we've got our roster of correspondents for next season full and ready to go. When we are back in July, obviously there'll be a correspondence
We should start a fund. Because we should congratulate Andy Martin, who won the Correspondent League this year.
Yep.
Maybe we should have a pool of money for them for the Without Mark Southerns League as well. Just in case. You know, like you get betting without Man City, that kind of thing.
Betting
without Mark Southerns.
Let's see. But looking forward to the insight on Nottingham Forest as well. Many of our listeners might not know much about their current squad and players. And keep your eyes peeled. I think... eventually, we will be releasing our pre-season July schedule. Remember, the season kicks off on the 6th or 5th of August.
It's going to be the 6th or the Saturday 5th. I can say Correspondent Week will be the final week of July. It'll be the 25th to the 31st of July. We'll do Correspondent Week.
Good. Right, moving on from that then. Do you want to talk a bit of FPL?
Do we have to?
Well, not really. You suggested it, sir.
Give a shout-out to two of our patrons, Dan the FPL man. FPL, what's his handle? Shit, I've forgotten now.
Dan the FPL fan 76.
That's the one, yeah. And Paul Meehan, who, to be honest, my body was so achy and I couldn't put my brain on FPL yesterday when I got back. It was a small minor hangover, maybe. And I asked them to look into mine and yours FPL seasons to see if there was anything that was interesting. I thought it would be nice for someone else to look at it rather than me looking at it biased eyes where I might just throw out some data that makes Suj look shit. I don't normally need to do that. You're more than capable of doing it yourselves.
Wow. For someone what did you finish? 20 points in the end?
I don't know if it was even that, but I beat you.
Exactly.
I beat you. Where's my £50 note?
A win's a win.
I don't even think you gave me my £50 note from last year.
I'll give it to you. I'll wire it to you.
You'll wire
it to
me. I've
got your bank account on my account now.
I noticed.
Although, actually, at home, I do have a couple of old £50 notes. I might bust them out. You know, the paper ones before they turn them to plastic. So, tell me.
Some interesting data to come out of this. So, clearly, both of us were heavily invested in Liverpool assets, as I think as many of us were this season just gone. 89 appearances in total for me from Liverpool players, 96 from you. Means you're basically averaging 2.5 Liverpool players on average per game week throughout the season.
That makes sense to me. Liverpool were my go-to.
And I'm going to...
That doesn't include captaincies as well.
No. I'm going to have a moment of silence here where we ask the listeners and viewers to say, which team did I use the second most this season in FPL? So just laughing, that's just looking at it.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it is, yeah. You tell them.
Watford. It's that King Dennis Foster.
Backman.
This is appearances as well. It's not like bench fodder.
Yeah, 50 appearances.
50 times you played a Watford player.
Backman, Foster,
that's
King.
1.2 per
and the three
week,
forwards, King,
roughly.
Dennis, and I started the season with Cucho, didn't I? Yeah. In hindsight, it'd have been better off just leaving him there dead all season, I think. Actually.
Unbelievable.
Doesn't get any better when you see I used the third most as well, Manchester United players.
Wow.
49 times, and that's despite the fact I barely had Bruno Fernandes all season, bar the fact I bought him at the worst time possible.
You had Ronaldo for the run of good fixtures, David De Gea for the good run of fixtures.
David De Gea I had quite a bit, yeah. I'd started the season with Luke Shaw. I also started the season with a player who I'd rather not talk about, who actually did okay for me as a differential at the start of the season. Then it's Man City and then it's Tottenham. I had six different Tottenham players during the season. I'm struggling to think of this. It doesn't feel like I had
Sessegnon, Emerson.
Oh, I had Doherty for a bit, didn't I? I got Doherty and I had him for 20 minutes, didn't I? Got injured. Kulusevski. It just feels like it was Son and Kane, though, really, doesn't it? I had Ben Davis for a little bit before Christmas. Actually did quite well for me. You laugh at Watford. I use Watford the second most, 50 appearances. They're third on the list for you, but you had 56 appearances from them.
So it's interesting that like my second, third, fourth most owned teams, in order being West Ham, Watford, Chelsea, I own players from those more than you own your second most team in Watford, which kind of makes me think that I chopped and changed a lot less. Like I stuck to what I liked and left it, which does suit my playing style. You took more hits and made more transfers than me over the season, I'm sure. I don't have the number.
Yeah, comfortably.
But by a mile, which means I just sat with what I liked. Like what West Ham for me, Bowen sat for so long, and Antonio... Antonio,
you had him like
I kept
all
him
season, didn't
for
you,
too
nearly
long, Antonio. So that definitely explains West Ham. I reckon most of that is going to be between the two of them. I also had Ben Johnson for a big chunk of it.
I was looking on Playmaker. I think I had I got rid of him just at the right time, Antonio. Except whoever I brought in obviously didn't do the business. But I'd averaged about 8 points per game from Antonio when I earned him this season at the start. I got off at the right time, basically.
Chelsea, I got 52 appearances from five different players, but I think I had a little bit of flirting around with the chip usage. That 52 appearances is going to be 90% made up of Rudiger and Mount. Like Chelsea for me is Rudiger and Mount, and then I've dabbled a bit of Havertz and a bit of this and a bit of that.
Rich James?
I didn't own him much this season at all. Whenever I was close to like it's time for me to get him, he'd get himself injured and rule himself out.
Did we read anything into in terms of the teams that we used the most? Obviously, look, we can look back on Watford and laugh about it on reflection, but
they were cheap, man.
Well, the goalkeepers make sense and stuff when they were used and that, definitely. And I still don't regret the... It was 43% of the final finishing top 10K captain Emmanuel Dennis in
really?
That double game week. So, you know, just shows a lot of people had a bad 1-0. Do we read anything, though, Suj, into the fact that in terms of the teams we use the most, Spurs are in my top five and West Ham's in your top five, but the other isn't. Do we read anything into that? Because if anything, I'm normally pessimistic on... I'd rather not own the Tottenham assets, and if they burn me, they burn me.
I don't have any allegiance to West Ham for a fantasy. Like, I don't get them because they play for West Ham. Like, Tom Med, for example, like Brentford being in the Premier League for the first time and him being a fan, you want to get your team, your players so you can support them and be proud of it. I don't have any of that element in my decision making. But I think there's something to read into perhaps when we're watching the games for our own clubs, we maybe see things that others don't. But then we also maybe see too much that others don't. Sometimes we get drawn into thinking, you know what, he's playing really well when actually the stats don't back it up. And we maybe paint our own narratives that are excessively optimistic about our players, perhaps. Like, I'm so surprised that Spurs are not in mine, because Kulu and Son I owned for quite a while, but I never touched the defence, to be
Kane?
Honest with you. Kane, I didn't own much this year.
No?
No.
I mean, there was a period definitely to and a period definitely not to. And I had Kane in both of those, I think, those two periods. The final difference between myself and usage was 23 points, of which, interestingly, 14 of that is made up from our highest scoring game week of the season, was both the same. I got 137 points in game week 26. That was the Salah triple captaincy week. What was it, 84 points?
Yep.
Well, once you take that off, it makes the rest of the game week sound a bit shit, actually. You got 123 that week. Also triple captain Mo Salah. Lowest game week score of the season for myself was 27 in game week 23, which was the Emmanuel Dennis captain week. And it also was for you, Serge, but you got 29 points that week. Average game week score for myself, 66.3 points. It's 65.7 for you. My highest game week rank was 47,000 in game week 22. My lowest, that was the highest rank I got to during the season, was 47K. The lowest I went to was 714K after game week 9. Remember that game week, Serge? Fucking Kai Havertz captaincy Mo Salah went off at Liverpool. But then I had my longest streak of green arrows actually after that week. I had 8 greens after that. Highest game week rank of the season was 161K. Just inside 6 million was the worst. My average game week rank, which I think is interesting because I finished, 82K roughly, I think. 1.482 million was the average game week rank across my season. For usage, that was 1.666 million as an average, which is quite a difference, really, yep, in terms of an average when you think about it, because it was only a 23-point difference between us. But it does go to say, I mean, it's often a mythical question, isn't it? If you finished inside the top million every game week, where would you finish? The answer is you'd probably win it. Yeah. I'm sure someone's done that statistically somewhere. So your final rank, Serge, was 113K61. Anything take away from these points, Serge? Well, you're a dream, aren't you?
Small, small margins, mate. At the end of the day,
yeah,
it's tiny, tiny margins. And the majority of mini leagues that I'm in, and I won a couple, and there was one that I stormed massively by 200 points, and then the others are all like 10 points and 20 points, and obviously only won two or three, and I lost most others, to be honest with you. Some of the correspondence league, for example, I'm like 23rd, 24th. Some of the other content creators league and really down. But from the average points and what have you, it just reiterates that it's small margins. It's really, really small margins. I'm trying not to give thought into next season yet. Like, do I want to play differently? Do I want to play the same? What am I going to think about? Do I want to set my team up? I'm trying not to think about it yet, but I'm not sure. Is the honest answer?
I wouldn't, in all honesty, as a little bit of advice, I wouldn't overthink it. There's two key elements to before you can have any sort of thinking for next season. Really, is one is the fixtures, which I want to say is the 16th of June, I think, Suj. They come out, the fixtures. Okay. That's really important, isn't it? Because look, suddenly if, I don't know, let's just say hypothetically, Arsenal start with a great fixture list, would it make Saka a better call than Bowen if West Ham have got a really tough run of fixtures, for example? There's no point. I use those two as an example because they're both going to get a price hike this year. And they might get a price hike to something that's quite similar, for example. And of course, the other element is the pricing. At what price is Erling Haaland going to be?
Mm-hmm.
Mo Salah, what do we think, Mo, just out of interest? 13 million again?
Yeah, 13.
Yeah,
I don't think much higher. 13. I think Haaland's going to come in less than Salah, 12 and a half.
I definitely think Haaland will come in less than Salah, to be honest.
12, 12 and a half.
I think, 12 and a half. What did Ronaldo come in at?
12 and a half.
I can't see how Haaland comes in less than that.
Yep.
To be honest, so that's where I think it will be, 12 and a half. What do you think about Sonny?
What did he start this season? 10?
Yeah. It won't be 10. That's the
11.
Do you think?
I think Sonny will come in.
If he's 11, he goes in again, mate.
Yeah, I think Sonny at 11.
I think it'd be 12, you know.
That's going to be particularly expensive. I think they will price Kane more expensive than Son. And Kane will come in at 12. So I think Sonny will come in at 11 or 11 and a half.
I don't see how that's justifiable.
Yeah, for me, I want to see what Kulu comes in at. Because if he's 7 or 7 and a half, he's straight in.
He'll get a jump up.
Yeah, but he started at 6 and a half. So he'll jump up to 7 and a half.
What if Bowen's only at that value? Bowen's still better call than Kulusevski, isn't
he? Well, we talked about this off air just before we started recording. If Mane does in fact leave and Liverpool come and buy Bowen, then he's a completely different
What if they don't?
Fish.
I mean, that's the point. What if Liverpool don't? What if Mane does go and Liverpool don't replace? I mean, what does that mean for like the likes of Diaz and Jota next
Diaz
year?
Diaz is I'm all over. I want to see.
You can't have all these players,
no,
Such.
We can't. We can't.
And the reality
I want to start with a very reliable.
Those are the likely value of, say, I mean, Jota, he's probably now going to escape, I think, being reclassified to a forward. Whereas I think going back a couple of months ago, it would have been a certainty for a reclassification. Him and Diaz probably do get a little bump up just by virtue of Mane leaving and guaranteed minutes for Liverpool. But Bowen, Saka, Kulusevski, these other guys are going to be at that sort of value. They're the difficult ones to fit in when you suddenly look at it on opening day and go, I want Salah, I want Haaland, I want Son. You're sacrificing these areas, aren't you? If you want to fit those kind of players in, and this is, we haven't spoke about the likes of Trent, Cancelo, Robertson, Reece James, for example. There's no point thinking about it now to see the pricing and the fixtures, I think, in reality.
According to the boys... And they've sent our team of the year.
Paul and Dan, yeah, go on.
I know what I lost. I captained Cristiano Ronaldo 8 times this season.
Did you?
According to them, yeah. I don't feel like I did.
I don't suppose you're making it up, mate.
I don't feel like I did. I captained Salah less than you did, 20 times versus 18 for me. I've still got more points off him.
I was going to say, there's an interest in that. Yeah, so I got, was it 417 out of 20 Salah captaincies? You got more out of 18.
429 out of 18. But I owned him at the end where you'd moved off him and went to Bruno and what have you. I had 163 points of Sonny. You had 122. But you cleaned up with Kane. You got
Sonny.
More points of Kane.
And by the way, we have found the evidence that I did tip up Heung-min Son to win the Golden Boot in pre-season. It was in the tweet with the predictions you think will happen this season that no one else does. I also predicted Suj to finish in the top 50k. But I knew you'd have a better season, mate.
Yeah, yeah.
Because your focus and concentration was on it more. I could tell last pre-season. Sonny, for me, I think I only had him for, what, 12 games, did you say?
No. It doesn't say how many times. Let me have a look here. You got 122 points.
Yeah.
3 captaincies. It doesn't say how many times he played.
I think I'm sure I looked on Playmaker. I'd only had him 12 times, I think. Mm. And you think back to, I started with him.
Yeah.
So what happened with Sonny was, I started with him, had him for the first 3. Great. Then he got injured and missed game week 4 against Palace. So I'd sold him. And then it was ages before I went back. And then, I think I wildcarded that period. Tottenham weren't really going mental under Conte, so I didn't have him. Then he got injured, or maybe I did have him. Then he got injured again in January, so I ended up being without him. And then just for ages, I just couldn't get him back. Couldn't get him back. And he killed me. He killed me.
Interesting that they've got relative gain and relative loss, right, for team of the season. Despite getting 429 points from Mo Salah, that's less than the field by 6.4 points. So the majority of players in the game got more points from Salah than me. And I got 429 of him with 18 captaincies.
What players hurt you the most this season, Suj?
Players, top flyers who hurt me the most. Bruno Fernandes.
Yeah.
I'm surprised by that. Perhaps at the start of the season.
Yeah.
Reece James.
Yeah.
Bukayo Saka, and that was one that I completely agree I missed the boat on. Harry Kane as well, I missed the boat on. And Ramsdale.
And Ramsdale, yeah.
Saka and Kane, I got stuck in situations where I couldn't get to them. That was frustrating with them. And I did have wildcard up my sleeve, so I probably maybe could have used it more aggressively.
So there's similarities to us. I also have Bruno Fernandes, Reece James and Ramsdale, and 3 of the 5 who hurt me the most in terms of rank. Ronaldo's on mine, top 5. Thinking the Norwich
still
double,
banged
he had
in
big captaincy.
16, 17 goals this season.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm not sure if I owned him at all, actually. The other name's really surprising, though. Trent? Mm. how I've ended up without him for a little while, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because I think he was out injured, and then I just couldn't get back to him. He was out for a couple of weeks and decided to move it on. And I knew when I moved him on, I wouldn't be able to go back for ages because of the setup of my team. And he obviously hurt me in that period. But then he was such a template player that I guess he's an auto in there just by the sheer fact of me owning him a lot less than the majority of other people would have. Like, my best differential return in a game week was Andy Robertson in game week 29. He was only like 8% owned or something. I think he got 18 points or something. So for the Trent being in there and hurting me, I'd obviously had Andy Robertson for quite a bit as well. So goes both ways. And I finished the season with both of them as well, right?
You played 4-4-2 10 times this season. I played 3-4-3 16 times this season. You played 3-4-3 10 times. But then I went to 4-3-3. I stuck with three attackers too much. You played a lot of times with two attackers. 19 game weeks, you only had two attackers, which I only had 10 game weeks. And I think the forwards were generally shit this year, to be honest with you. I played too many weeks with too many attackers, according to that.
Well, yeah,
twice as many game weeks I had with an extra attacker than you.
If you look throughout the season,
you had twice as many game weeks with an extra defender.
You had Antonio in the first sort of 10 game weeks or so of the season, and Harry Kane's period, let's say sort of February, March, and I guess at the end, was the only times that it was even worth having a forward. So, again, it's interesting. I know there's a bit of groupthink at the moment, starting next season again, kind of thinking, what would I want to do with my team? A lot of people sitting there at the moment going, I'm going with 2 4.5 million forwards on the opening day. And going, right, well, I'm going with Haaland as the third, or maybe you're deciding to go with a mid-range forward, perhaps a Mitrovic or Solanke. But then here's the thing, right? Those guys coming up, those two players particularly, Mitrovic and Solanke, the pricing is going to be interesting. Because if they appeal, they're going to be very, very popular. Again, possibly subject to the fixtures that both Fulham and Bournemouth land with at the start of the season. Mitrovic is going to do much better than he's done previously. I'm absolutely certain of it. This is a very different Fulham. They're playing to his strengths and stuff. And I think Solanke will do well. I think he's grown. I think if someone said to me, who's a real outside shot for the England squad who's nowhere near it at the moment for the World Cup, I'd say I wouldn't rule him out.
Okay.
If he has a really good opening couple of months for Bournemouth in the Premier League. Then you're looking at, if you want Mitrovic, Solanke, and you want Haaland, you still got three up front, haven't you? Mm. And I'm pretty sure they'll be the most popular three in terms of ownership, unless, like I said, unless Fulham have a complete dog shit opening. If Fulham have like Liverpool, City in the first two or something, then I think people will skip it and look at coming back.
Captain C. I beat you again on captain points, but by much less than last year this time. 658 plays 652.
You got more than me, yeah?
Yeah, just. I mean, last year was a big gap, but this year, I can't much remember. Less. I feel like it was like, I got 500 and something, you were 400 and something.
I mean, the
year.
Captaincy was much bigger this year. I don't know if those numbers are good.
So many of us captained.
I know the highest of all players, and apologies, I can't remember the name of the Twitter account. It was 908, I think.
Wow, that's incredible.
No, that is mental.
I think one of the boys has pointed out I got 41 or more from my captain three times in the season. You got
staggering.
It twice, 21, 26 and 32. So that's going to be obviously the week that we triple captained.
I know who your
Salah.
Third one is. So Jared Bowen is game week 21. Salah is game week 26. I know your third one.
Sonny
at Villa, yeah.
Mm. Which is no surprise to me.
Well, I didn't
really
have him,
popped
did I?
Off that week, big time. Kind of saved me that week. Did Sonny.
Similar goalkeeper selections, picked the wrong goalkeeper eight times. But I think a lot of the time I don't think there was a decision to be made, so that number's probably worse than it sounds in terms of an average. You mentioned hits, so I took 68 points total, you took 32.
It's a big difference.
Yes, it is. The average in the top 10K I think was about 57.
And I think this stat, I don't know enough about it. I think let's chuck it out there to Mark and Az, because they do a lot of stats work on their pod. But I watched an episode where Az was talking about hits. What was the episode that we were on? Where we were talking about the league that they're in.
When he told you to sell Trossard, get on with it.
Well, that league, which has some very, very good managers, I remember very distinctly in that episode, the higher up the managers were, the fewer hits they'd taken. And the ones that were lower down had taken more hits. Obviously, that makes sense when you're chasing and what have you. And I bucked the trend because I was low and didn't take any hits. And I don't know if there's anything into that. I don't like taking hits. And I'm not going to change my playing style.
Neither do I.
The number of times I roll transfers.
It doesn't suit my nature to be aggressive as an FPL manager. But I think the sheer volume of doubles this season and blanks, that there were occasions where it was worth doing it. If you were bringing in two players who had a game versus two players who didn't have a game at all, you should be getting that and at least the appearance points back as a leveler, shouldn't you? So there were so many reasons this season, I think, for hits to be taken. Next season is likely to be very different. And I guess one thing, we have mentioned it briefly, but next season will be different again because this big World break Cup. We've got in the middle with the World Cup. There are 16 game weeks planned prior to the World Cup, with the rest obviously recommencing from Boxing Day. Have you thought any more about what you think they're likely to do? I can't remember what pod we discussed it on, but
About Sky, to be honest, the overhaul, triple overhaul or double overhaul or no overhaul.
I think FPL will go unlimited transfers during the World Cup, I think. And therefore, I think it will effectively be free wild cards next year. I think that's what they'll do. I hope they don't, because I don't think that's right, because I think we discussed it on whatever pod that was about the idea that there's a real danger with unlimited transfers coming out of a World Cup, that
template,
you're essentially giving everyone a wild card at the same time, you end up with a template. It's a little bit dangerous. What it does mean as well, I think if they do that, there'll be a lot of early wild cards next year as well, because you think you've got a wild card for effectively game week 16. There's going to be a lot of early activation of wildcards. And it feels like last year, I don't know the numbers on it, but there were a lot going early again last year. If that happens, I think the majority of experienced players will probably wildcard inside the first four or five game weeks.
Yeah, if that was the case, I think I'd be super aggressive for the first four game weeks. Like, really pick a team that was a bit out there, but that could either go off crazy or not. And if it doesn't, just pull the trigger. Job done. And revert to something safe. But obviously, I do think they will tell us before the season starts what the plan is.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I don't think it's one of those where we have to react. When we had the shutdown of games, obviously, they made it unlimited transfers, or they gave us all a wild card at the end of that. It was reactionary. This time, I think we'll know about it well in advance. So we can plan strategies around it. And of course, we will be talking about
strategies. We have no ITK on this, by the way. We generally don't know anything. It's just hypothesizing that in terms of them wanting to keep engagement of players for after the World Cup. Be interesting, won't it? Say everyone will be on wildcard for like Boxing Day.
Yeah.
Be a lot of bad decisions, won't there?
Definitely. Cool. That's a wrap of our FPL seasons.
That's it, I think. We do have one more pod tomorrow. There's been no Q&A on this today because we're going to open up tomorrow's podcast as literally a Q&A. So keep an eye out tonight. I'll have a post on Twitter asking for questions on anything, be it FPL, football, food. We know you like to talk about food. Anything you want to know more from game week 39 and the day, anything about Planet FPL and where we might be heading, where we've been, throw it all open tomorrow. That is literally going to be our last podcast. We are taking a month off and season 6 will begin on Monday, July the 4th.
Sounds good. Listen, I'm not even going to plug Patreon. We're not there's nothing happening for a month. So no,
join us on July the 1st because that will recommence on Friday, July the 1st.
Indeed. We'll be back with that content as well. In the meantime, enjoy your evenings, afternoons, whenever you may be listening. Bookmark tomorrow at 8 p.m. for the Game Week 39 game and we'll be back at you tomorrow. Stay safe. Ciao for now.
Thanks, everyone. Be nice to each other. Cue music, please, man child.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Sports Social Podcast Network.